Ladies and gentlemen, what's happening now? And welcome to the beginning of Drive 105's Match Night Live's 2025 season coverage. My name is Dee Kern, and together as a team, we cannot be more thrilled about bringing you the live coverage of Derry City Football Club home and away as we keep the Red and White Army updated on every thrilling moment of the season. But today, we're stepping back in time. Yes, it is time to complement our service with the return of Derry Nostalgic, which is brought to you by Paul Martin Menswear, like all of our online content. In this programme, we dive deep into the moments that shaped the club and the individuals who loved it. And what a better way to kick it off than to have a conversation with a player about one of the most infamous Northwest derbies in history. Call it fate, call it destiny, but the 2003 promotion relegation playoff between Derry City and Finn Harps was a match that had it all. Drama, high stakes, and an unforgettable finale. This wasn't just a game, it was a final match in the storied career of Liam Coyle, played in front of the Old Jungle. A game where promotion and relegation hung in the balance, and one that solidified itself as a pivotal chapter in Derry City's storied history. And today, I'm getting Derry nostalgic about that incredible night with Gareth McGlynn, the player whose controversial assist helped Liam seal that winning goal. So sit back, grab a cup of tea, or something stronger, but enjoy it responsibly, and join us as we relive one of the most iconic nights at the Brandywell and in the club's history. Let's get it started.
Couldn't write it. I mean, we always talk about Finn Harps and Derry and the rivalry in the Northwest. Unfortunately, we need each other. The fact that it was a playoff game was bittersweet, because you knew that no matter who won, one was staying up and one was going down. So you weren't going to be competing with each other the year after, and possibly for many a year after. So that was bittersweet. Great game. So, I mean, two unbelievable games, great crowds, two good teams as well. I mean, obviously, Derry have been going well recently. Not so good before that, and Harps would have had a really strong team back then as well in 2003, and it was strange to see both of them in that position come the end of the season, considering the success we had in 2002 with winning the cup. It kind of went downhill after that.
Coming into the 2003 season, having just missed out on being in this situation in 2002, what was the expectations for the year for you and for the team?
Quite fragmented. I mean, we obviously did well. Literally, when we held up the cup in Tulka Park after beating Shamrock Rovers in 2002, we went nosediving. I don't know what it was. I think we struggled to win a game after that in the 2002 season. And then 2003 was just a knock-on effect on that. I think there was a load of turnover. The amount of players coming through the door, it was like every time you leant down to do your boots to go out training, you looked up and there was three new faces sitting looking at you. And they were picking them from all sorts of places in Europe and the world. Just that consistency just wasn't there. And when you don't have that consistency year on year, when I mean consistency, keeping 55-60% of your squad and adding a few quality players, I mean, we must have kept very few. And the players that we brought in just weren't at the level that we needed. They were more squad players. We needed three or four starters, and they just never came. So we just continued to struggle throughout that year, 2003.
You mentioned that the season was fragmented. There was three managers throughout the year. Gavin Dykes became the third, taking over from Dermot Keely after he resigned in September. How did Gavin's approach differ from Dermot's in motivating the squad, considering he was the assistant manager at the time?
Absolutely no different. Gavin Dykes and Dermot are cut from the same cloth. They are two peas in a pod, and it didn't really change much. Listen, he had his own a couple of fresh ideas, but fundamentally the training, the setup, the tactics, the strategy of 21 games, it was just the same. It was just the same old, same old. Dykes, he was an unbelievable player and a decent manager, but he probably didn't have the players either, and we weren't. See, coming in as well, third manager in the year, that we didn't feel as if we were fit enough. Training wasn't probably as hard as it should have been. It was a tough gig for him. So going into the end of that season as the third manager, it was set up to fail, you know.
in the playoff final first leg after overcoming Limerick. You're in the bench due to a groin injury that you sustained down in Limerick. Gavin mentions in the press that he had doubts about involving you in both of the games because of your injury, but he said that you pushed him to be included. Do you remember what you said to convince him?
Well, you just, you know yourself, I mean, you want to play in the big games, you want to play in every game, but especially the playoff. There was nothing talked about for weeks leading up to the game, so there's no way that you don't want to be involved. And as a player, you'll do anything to get over the line or get fit or even to get you through the games. I mean, obviously it probably wasn't a good idea when it's muscle, you can tear it more and stuff, but nah, I was always wanting to play in the game. I would have told him whatever he wanted to hear to play that game. So it wasn't too hard convincing Dykes either. I mean, Dykes, he would have been cut from the same cloth. I mean, he would have played through injuries, and even that, his generation, the Hargies, the Pizzas, the Lames, they all would have played with injuries. It was just the normal thing to do, you know. Obviously, me coming into that kind of changing room at the very beginning, I would have taken that from them. Just because you've got a wee tear in your groin or that it's not too bad doesn't mean you pull out of big games, or especially when the team needs you. So nah, I was always playing that game. It would have been need to be hanging off for me to miss that one.
You're not the only one, to be fair, but most famously, so was Peter Hutton. He had an ankle injury going into the playoffs and even the Waterford game as well. Is it true that he wore a soft cast for all those final games around his ankle so that he could play?
Probably, yeah. That's something Pizza would do. There was that many ankle, the only ankle cast or brace that I ever saw was by Clive Delaney. But I'm sure like there's loads of that kind of stuff, and you would have the tape that would kind of support the movement in the ankle so that it didn't hurt. And then you've got the painkillers that you'd have been taking. But yeah, and probably we look back now when you talk about all those injuries and you take it for granted, you just probably say, oh, Derry would have had just slightly the better team. But when you consider all those injuries and we were kind of patched together, so to come through that two-legged game was decent.
And it built up to the playoffs. He's travelled to Waterford, came up, went down to Limerick for a Wednesday afternoon game, came up, played Limerick again on the Brandywell, and then you're away at Fun Park. Was this just taking its toll, all the travel and the season in general?
Yeah, I think if there had been two or three more games after that, I think we would have been really struggling. I think we just maxed out. We travel, we fatigue, we kind of wrecking our brains to why the squad's not performing. To going through the three managers, put it this way, it was probably the most emotional year of my time at Derry, to be honest with you. The thought of being relegated with Derry City just didn't sit well with me, but everybody in the changing room. And then all the travel, there seemed to be a lot more travel that year. I don't know whether it was the way the fixtures were or the way that the teams were obviously way down that side of the country, but it was a tough year. So the emotion after beating Harps in the final leg, you could see it in everyone's face.
The first leg at Fun Park ended 0-0. It was played in front of 6,000 fans. What stands out most about that game in your head?
Just a dogged game. Everything you get in Fun Park, you got that night. It was a tough game. In fairness to Harps, I remember Harps' spells in that game where Harps were putting us under pressure. Now, you get that up in Fun Park anyway. You never go up there and run away with a 2 or 3-0 one. It just doesn't happen, especially in a derby game. But I remember the fans as well, the banter between the fans, the energy was different as well. I think it was because of what was at stake. The thought of, obviously, the Harps fans, the thought of relegating Derry City and vice versa was just, it just added a wee bit more spice to it. But the game itself was just a battle. And I think a 0-0 result would have been one that we wouldn't have been too disappointed with, especially bringing them back to Brandywell.
You came on in the second half and Gavin Dykes remarked that you did really well in the battle at the centre of the park, but coming off that heavy pitch, how was your groin feeling in the coming days?
It's funny, I remember on the day him asking me about how it was, and of course I'm just saying, yeah, it's fine, but once you went out to warm up on the pitch, it's like playing in sand, so it's pulling all the time. But no, in fairness, the medical team got me up, and I actually felt fine during the game. Don't know whether it was adrenaline or what it was, but once after the game, the painkillers wore off, you could start feeling the wee tweaks and the wee aches and pains. But now they got me ready then for the second leg, so it was, thank God, I came out of it all right.
The second leg is December 13th in 2003, and it's a match that everybody talks about for a variety of reasons, but it's also the final match in front of the Old Glen Tourne stand in the iconic Jungle Shed. Do you feel that the ground lost some of its noise and atmosphere after that tin roof came down in the jungle?
Oh, definitely. I'm just glad I experienced it, you know what I mean, as a player. There was something incredible about it. And there were probably, when the development was happening, there would have been the history of it and what it was and what it saw and what it went through. There would have been shouts to keep that side of it if we could. Would have been quite nice, but it would have been, put it this way, that we won that game in front of the Glen Tourne in the Shed. How devastating would it have been if that last game in front of those two pieces of infrastructure would have been getting relegated to the first division by your biggest rivals? I mean, it just doesn't bear thinking about.
You start on the bench again for the second one. Did you push hard at Gavin again?
Everybody was pushing hard to be involved in that game. Everybody wanted to play. Everyone wanted to play their part. I mean, if you play that the part where and you score a goal, it's forever remembered. You know what a game they play in, and you just want to play in the big games. You know what I mean? But everybody was pushing hard. And in fairness, in training, I remember leading up to both games, the intensity kind of gone up a notch. And unfortunately, if we had that intensity for those games throughout the season, we would have been all right. But it just shows you when the chips are down, the boys came up with the goods.
Mark Farn opens a score in the 13th minute, and he plays a key role for the squad after Gavin brings him on the first team after taking over as manager. Before his debut in October, as you said, you know, Gareth, City had only scored 24 league goals, so was it obvious from the start that he was going to be the man to make an impact towards the end of the season?
Not really, you know, because he came back from Tranmere as a left back, and Oxo kind of went and talked to him and worked with him and discussed the possibility of him transitioning into a striker. Obviously, Oxo seen something. That's what Oxo was unbelievable at, was being able to spot a player and seeing the abilities that someone had and kind of tweaking them a wee bit. And he turned him into a striker. And then you could see, and in fairness to Mark, it wasn't a case of, we just plugged him in there up front and he just started scoring goals. He was incredibly hard working on his finishing, especially. He always had the pace. He had hamstring injuries, which he worked very hard at. And then when he got the chance to go up front, he never looked back. He just started to score goals. You knew he was always a threat. And then once he got the opportunity, his finishing just improved so much. You knew when you got the ball in front of him, when you put in front of goal, you were pretty confident. Whereas other players at the time, and even throughout that season that were up front, when they went through one-on-one or had a chance, you just were never convinced, you know.
For the rest of the first half, City dominate. You're brought in the 71st minute as Derry appear to be sitting back. Do you remember what your instructions were coming off the bench?
Not really. No, I don't know what Dykesy said to me, but I can imagine it was nervy enough because it's still in the balance at that stage. I remember Harps weren't playing terribly well, but they were creating one or two half chances, so it only took one of those chances they land, and then of course they got their goal as well, which kind of threw a spanner in the works and sent the place bananas.
In the 75th minute, Kier Martin nearly made a 2-0 with a chip off the bar, but he was in top form coming up towards the end of the season, and we all know now that he had agreed a pre-contract with Shelburne, which he would eventually break. Did the team know about this deal, and did he signify to use when he was going to break it, or he was thinking about breaking it?
No, we didn't know about it. Well, I didn't know about it anyway, and I think he kept it quite under wraps, which is the right thing to do, especially when we've got a big game like that coming up. The last thing he needed and Derry needed was a big distraction like that. I mean, remember the last person to make the move to Shelburne didn't go down too well, so I can understand why he kept it under wraps and then breaking it as well. I mean, that was interesting. I never actually got chatting to him about that or what went on then.
Well, 5 minutes into the additional time, Kevin McHugh, he rockets the ball past Alan Goff, the equalising, we're heading the extra time. What are you thinking in that moment?
Oh, I'm thinking momentum's with Harps here. This is not the script we wanted. I just remember that the Brandywell kind of just going under disbelief, and then your mind then immediately turns the extra time. What are we going to do? Looking around, making sure everybody's fit and well, and we're strong enough to get through it. So obviously, me coming on the 71st minute, I wasn't as tired as the boys, so there's extra responsibility there. But no, I think inside you're still pretty confident, but you're thinking, oh, they've got a lifeline here now, and they could kick on from here.
Our 105th minute, the big moment comes, and I've waited 22 years to ask you this question, Gareth. How many yards must you roll a ball forward before you take a free kick?
I think I was just inside the limit on that day now, if you check the rules. But no, and who else better to take the moment as well? It was fitting that he got the one or two.
Noah King got sent off at halftime because he was remonstrating about his displeasure of what happened. I'm not sure if you remember, but Noah King had a column in the Derry Journal at the time called Kinger's Corner, and he used it in a build-up to hype up his team, and he used it to vent his frustration following the game. Do you want to hear what he wrote about you in the winning goal?
Uh-huh.
So this is what he said. Suddenly, the game turns on a referee's mistake, a common and acceptable part of the proceedings, but the situation was brilliantly seized upon by young Gareth McGlynn and for his super-quick-thinking free kick, followed by a touch of class by the legend Liam Coyle. Now, hearing that, Gareth, I think there's a compliment down there somewhere.
It felt like a slap in the back of the head, but no, I think there is as well. That's the perfect backhanded compliment.
He had talked in the paper in the days before, the days after, about conspiracy theories made by others, pointing the finger at the referee, Alan Kelly, and Eddie Barr's contribution too in the first leg. When confronted about the match, do you ever hear people like Finn Harps fans or anybody say that the league wanted City to remain in the top division?
No, I don't think so. And not only that, I mean, Alan Kelly was the best ref by a country mile at the time as well. I mean, bar a couple of errors I can think in my career, I think he was the standout referee. So no, I don't think. And the way the game went as well, I mean, that's nonsense. That's exactly what it is, conspiracy theories. And fairness to Harps fans, any Harps fans that I talked to that were at both legs, they never bring that kind of stuff up. They saw it as an unbelievably competitive playoff, two-legged playoff, and the best team came out. Over the two legs, I don't think they can have too much to say about the game. I think Derry were definitely the better of the two teams.
When we look back at Liam's goal and the finish, his last for the club, of course, but I highly doubt that it'll ever feature in any of his top five showreels, what?
No, I don't think it's in the... I'm going to be the bottom five, but hey, it doesn't matter, does it? His name's there, and he's the boy that did it for us. But I think it was fitting as well that he got the winner.
The next season, Gavin's invested in. He brings in a lot of players, a very high budget, hoping to challenge. But sadly, he leaves his manager by the summer. Do you think the expectation was a bit high on him?
Yeah, it's like everything. I mean, the other thing we got to understand, we're seeing it now at Derry as well. I mean, it doesn't change. Just because you throw a heap of money at it doesn't mean or guarantee anything. And it almost brings on extra pressure for the manager at the time, A, to spend it properly, and B, to get the results. So it's a double-edged sword. Got all this money, and people know that you've got all this money as well. So average players are getting probably overpaid. Then you've got local players who's getting way less, that more value added to the squad and to the mission. But yeah, Dykesy, it just didn't go well. I don't think the balance of the team was there. That the signings weren't as good as we thought. Again, come from the year before, I said it before, we probably needed three or four starters, and the five or six or as many as they brought in, none of them really went in and kicked on and started, you know.
We haven't mentioned Badger yet properly, but he started the 2003 season as manager, and he was your first manager at the club. Were you sad to see him leave at the time?
Oh, was I. Aye, Badger. Really enjoyed playing under Badger, no doubt about it. I mean, he gave me an opportunity. I remember, like yesterday, when we were down playing the complex for the reserves, Oxo had said that Badger was coming to watch the game, and I think we beat Fannett or something like that. Just seeing him there, I mean, a legend of the club, what a player he was, coming down to give everybody a lift, and it gave everybody in the club a lift, always having him there and seeing him there and talking to him. He was always very good as well at giving advice. He wasn't one of these managers that just came in, did his job and left. He was always there if you needed him for anything else as well. So I was sad to see him go. And it's funny, it's hard to put your finger on what actually went wrong with that team while under Kevin. I can't remember where we were. We were at a pre-season camp in Spain somewhere, and I remember looking around going, oh, this feels a wee bit different. There was a youthness about it, there was an energy about it, there was a competitiveness about it. I remember three or four players throughout the week's camp going head to head in training, trying to win a five-a-side and maybe a few scraps breaking out, and I was going, this feels like standards are being lifted and being raised. But it never really kicked on then, and then unfortunately he left.